From Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. This is The Exchange. This hour, we focus on job prospects as our economy struggles to recover from the worst economic downturn since the 1930s. Specifically, we want to examine the job outlook for two careers that parents have often taken as a measure for success in their kids and a measure of job security: doctors and lawyers. In our first half hour, I'll be joined by Dean Alan Vestal of Drake University's Law School. Then in our second half hour, Roger Tracy, Assistant Dean of the University of Iowa, Roy J. and Lucille A. Carver College of Medicine. The employment outlook for graduating doctors and lawyers, right after this hour's news. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Glad to have you join us over the noon hour. And if you heard our little promotional spots over the last 24 hours, originally we had planned to talk this hour with the American paleoanthropologist Lee Berger about a recent discovery he made of a new hominid species. Unfortunately, Lee Berger has fallen ill, a very sore throat, can hardly talk. We'll reschedule that conversation and wish Lee Berger a speedy recovery. And instead for this hour, we thought we would focus on job prospects at graduation time. And as our economy struggles to recover from the worst economic downturn since the 1930s, specifically, we want to examine the job outlook for two careers that parents have often taken as a measure for success in their kids and a measure of job security, high job security: doctors and lawyers. Later in the hour, we'll be joined by Roger Tracy of the University of Iowa Carver College of Medicine to give us the prognosis for a career as a physician. But first of all, we want to turn to the outlook for lawyers. Joining me by phone from Des Moines, Dean Alan Vestal of Drake University's Law School. Good afternoon, Dean Vestal.
Good afternoon to you, Ben.
Today's Wall Street Journal has an article that talks about the employment prospects for a career in law and that they are looking dim. They profile in this article a 25-year-old law student at Chicago's Northwestern University School of Law who, according to the article, sent out 50 resumes. So far, no luck. He's just shy of graduating, and he has $150,000 of student debt. He plans to move back in with his parents to sell music and movies online. The Wall Street Journal calls it one of the worst job markets for attorneys in decades. What are you seeing, Dean Vestal?
Well, I think the Wall Street Journal article is perhaps an accurate reflection of the national trend. What we see here in Iowa is a little different, and I think it comes from a couple reasons. Firms in Iowa have traditionally been a little more conservative about hiring people, and so because they haven't overextended, we don't see some of the same trends that you see nationally in terms of cutting back, deferring people, starting positions, things of that sort. And also, I think the economy here is a little different than it is nationally. The Wall Street Journal is focusing rather exclusively on large firms, and a lot of our graduates and a lot of graduates from the University of Iowa end up going with small and medium-sized firms, and the situation there is quite different.
Quite different. How different? I mean, Karen Clauda of the University of Iowa Law School is quoted in that article. She's head of career services at the University of Iowa Law School, calls it the worst job market she's seen, and she's been doing that for 23 years.
Yeah, I think it's a challenging market. That's absolutely clear, and it's a challenging market even here. But a couple of indicators. This year, we had an increase in the number of on-campus interviews from firms. We had an increase in the number of firms that were collecting resumes for jobs. I think one thing that we have seen that the Wall Street Journal article talks about is the summer clerkship positions for students between their second and third years didn't mature into offers. And I think that's a reflection of the fact that the firms are being fairly careful and conservative about their hiring. And clearly public hiring is down. I mean, the budget situation of the state and of the surrounding states is such that you don't see the kinds of job openings that you would have seen in public defender offices, legal aid offices, things of that sort. So that clearly is part of the national trend in which I was sharing right now. So those sectors of the economy are weak for our students. Mm-hmm. But in terms of small firm hiring and medium firm hiring, we see the same kind of pattern that we've seen in the past. And typically, for those kinds of firms, students aren't being hired before they graduate and take and pass the bar exam. So it's really quite early to start making predictions about where we're going to be on that. And if you take as a leading indicator the number of firms that came on campus, there's some reason to be hopeful about where the job market will be, you know, at the nine-month period when we typically measure such things.
Mm-hmm. Internships, also an indicator. Are you seeing a downturn there?
No, in fact, in some of the areas, the number of internships has actually gone up. For example, the Polk County court system here cut back the number of paid clerks that the judges had, and we stepped in and were able to place student interns with the courts to try to take up some of that slack. So there have been situations where internships have actually increased rather than decreased during this time.
You're saying that the Wall Street Journal article of today is reflecting sort of the national picture, while it's different and more moderated in Iowa. Can you quantify that at all and tell us, sort of give us an across-the-board picture with some numbers about what you're seeing in terms of a downturn for the job prospects for graduating law students from Drake?
There are some numbers that I think help get the situation, although it's important to realize that when we talk about law school hiring, we traditionally have looked at a nine-month hiring picture. So you go out from graduation 9 months and you see what the employment picture is. But we have those figures for the graduating class of 2008, and that was a fairly typical year for us, and the graduation employment rate was just right at 97%. We've now almost completed the inventory of those people who graduated a year ago, and it looks like that figure will be down, but only slightly, probably in the mid-90s. The question is, where we'll be with this graduating class, and we won't know that for another 9 months after graduation. So it still is a picture that's in flux. It's still developing, but there's some indication that the downturn that we saw last year wasn't as great as people thought. The other indicators that you see in the Wall Street Journal article, for example, they talk about large firms that deferred students from coming, where they made an offer that was accepted by a student and then had that student wait for 6 or 9 months before they came to the job. And the journal's point, quite correct, is that means that there's some pent-up supply there, people who are in the pipeline who haven't started those jobs yet, and that's going to affect the employment picture for this year's graduates. I think that's quite true, but it's important to note that, as far as I'm aware, no firm in Des Moines or in Iowa has engaged in that practice. So I think that's one where we see some regional differences that could be pretty important in the job picture.
But you don't have any feeling. Do you have any? What's your best guess that this is the bottom of the trough that we're seeing, or near the bottom of the trough in terms of employment prospects for law graduates, or perhaps the thin end of a larger wedge?
Well, it is early to be able to tell that, but I think a couple indicators are public employment. If you start seeing the public budget start to come around so that you see a reversal of the hiring freezes for public defenders, legal aid, people of that sort, then I think that's one indication that things are going to be coming back. And we simply don't know yet where that's going to go.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the firms, I think we'll have a much better idea sort of midsummer. Once the students take the bar exam, they don't get the results back until September. But a lot of those small and medium-sized firms wouldn't make offers to students until they'd passed the bar exam and gotten those results back. So it's really quite premature to be talking about this year. But it clearly is a very challenging market. And one of the things we've been trying to do is to encourage our students to think perhaps in terms of different options than they would have thought of in years past. I mean, the number of students who graduate and want to stay in Des Moines for us is really a substantial number. And we've done quite a bit to get the students to look at opportunities outside of Des Moines, to look at smaller firms and smaller communities, for example. So next fall, we're going to be running a program trying to match up students, recent graduates, with practitioners out in the state, typically in small towns, county seat towns, who are thinking about retiring, to get that transition underway so that you can have a new cohort of people coming into those practices. So there's a lot that's being done in that area, but it really is a little early to know what the prospect is going to look like.
Dean Vestal with us from Drake University's Law School until half past the hour. We want to reach out to our listeners. Are you a student of law or a recent graduate of law school? We'd like to have you join our conversation. Tell us your story, your concerns. 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, or email us, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. Of course, that very distressing profile in the Wall Street Journal leading off the article, student graduating from Northwestern's School of Law, no luck, with 50 resumes sent out, $150,000 of student debt. Are you encountering any panicked graduates at Drake University with similar stories or anything close to it?
Well, I think to the extent we have panicked graduates right now, it's because they've just started finals.
All right.
But no, I think students are concerned about it. The faculty and the administration are concerned because clearly there is a more difficult market than in years past. I think there is a good reason to be hopeful about where the economy is heading. But in the interim, with this cohort of graduates, I think all of us are going to have to work harder to get the students placed and to give them the opportunities that they want to have coming out of law school. I think our picture is better than it is on the two coasts, but that doesn't mean that it isn't serious, and it's certainly of concern to us, and we're doing quite a bit to try to help the students realize those opportunities that are out there.
Mm-hmm. We're struggling in this recovery of the worst economic downturn since the 1930s. When we have had less serious economic downturns in the past, have we seen this sort of thing reflected in law school job prospects?
Yeah, you start to see changes in the pattern of where the students go, and I think that's reflected this time as well, that people, because the opportunities may not be there at large firms in large urban areas, they start looking at smaller firms, start looking at smaller communities. But I think that also has something to do with students over the last generation becoming much more sophisticated about the choices that are before them and looking much more at lifestyle choices. I mean, I graduated in 1979 from law school, and it was very typical for the people in my class to go to a large law firm in a large urban area and spend their entire careers there, or at least think that they were going to. It's now shifted dramatically since that time. So that I think very few students go to that first job thinking that that's going to be where they'll be for their entire career. And that kind of flexibility, I think, makes it easier to look at markets like this and not think that what you do coming right out of law school is necessarily what you're going to be doing for your entire professional career.
Alan Vestal is the dean of Drake's Law School. Talking to him this first half hour, he'll remain with us. We've got to take a short break. After that, we'll check in with the doctors this hour, looking at the employment prospects for two of the most vaunted professions, successful, high-security doctors and lawyers. What's happened on those fronts in the midst of this economic downturn? I'd like to have you share your story. 1-866-780-9100 or The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. We'll be back in 1 minute. It's The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News, looking at law school and the recent graduates there. Job prospects. So law school enrollment has held steady in recent years, while law firms, judges, and the government and other employers have cut hiring drastically. That pointed out in a Wall Street Journal article of today. And some law firms, in fact, cutting hiring of law graduates by up to two-thirds. Talking with Dean Alan Vestal of Drake Law School about the picture here in Iowa. And we want you to join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100, or email us, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. The Wall Street Journal article says the situation is so bleak, Dean Vestal, that some students and industry experts are rethinking the value of a law degree, which, of course, has long been considered a ticket to financial security. Do you think we have to rethink the value of a law degree in this new economy?
Well, I think it's always a decision that people have to make in terms of what they see their future being. I frankly think that the students who go to law school for the right reasons aren't going for the economic return necessarily. They're going for the career possibilities that it opens up. I mean, we want people who go to law school because they're going to use that degree to have fulfilling, satisfying careers and to help society. I think those opportunities are still there. On the economic question, the pieces of it are more complex. You have to look at the amount of student debt that the student's going to come out with, and those figures vary widely. Our average student comes out with 3 years of law school debt of about $90,000. That's a daunting figure, and it's one that we worry about, and we try to keep tuition increases as low as possible. But there are programs out there, including a new federal program that started a year ago, that give students, even students who go into private practice at in situations that don't pay high salaries, give them some relief from that loan obligation.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a pretty complex calculation that people have to go through. I guess I had never thought it was a good idea for people to go to law school because of the economic return. They ought to be going to law school because of what they can do with the law degree. Now, obviously, you know, economics come into the factor, but if someone is going to law school or medical school because they think it's a way to make money, then I would suggest they're making the wrong choice in the beginning.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you mentioned the point about debt, because that has to be very, very scary as a graduate. You invest all this time. You mount this debt. Alan Tannenbaum mentioned in this article as well. He's the chair of the American Bar Association, a commission on the economic impact of the economic crisis on the law profession. He says in this article, those considering law school might want to reconsider. Those are pretty strong words, and he points to exactly what you did. He said, you rack up what is on average nationwide $100,000 of student debt to get a law degree. How do you dig yourself out of that hole without a good job?
Well, and my concern, though, has always been, I think, a little more subtle than that. You get a student who comes out with a student debt of that magnitude, I worry that it changes their career options, so that if you have a student who comes from Washington, Iowa, or Lamoni and wants to go back to that community, I worry that we price ourselves out of that market so that we're not serving those communities as well as we might. And I think that's a concern that didn't arise simply with the current economic situation. That's always been there. And it's one that we have to be constantly attentive to make sure that we're serving the state well by having lawyers go back to small communities and small towns and provide the public leadership that we've always provided in those communities.
Julia is joining us from West Des Moines, about 5 minutes left in our conversation with Dean Vestal. Julia, welcome to our program.
Hi there. I'm just curious about whether there would be more or equal or less money for scholarships here in the Midwest or in the Des Moines area.
Specifically in the area of law.
How
has that been affected by the economy, Dean Vestal?
Well, it's actually, I think, varied quite a bit from school to school. We've actually increased fairly substantially the amount of scholarship assistance that we're able to make available to students. And we were also able to keep the tuition increase for next year to right at 3%. Other schools, especially public schools, have clearly had budgetary constraints on both scholarship assistance and on tuition increases that have made it more difficult there. But I think everyone is looking to try to mitigate the amount of student debt.
Okay. Now the landscape for any particular profession changes over time. How would you describe changes in the law profession landscape at this time? Areas that are trending positive, others that are trending negative?
Well, I mean, it is clear that the practice in Iowa has changed over time. Much more sophistication in terms of intellectual property work, for example, than we saw 20 or 30 years ago, and that's been a real positive. I think the quality of practice here is really quite good. And has been. And so we see some of those changes, but not the kinds of major shifts that you see on the coast, for example, where you see very major changes in the kind of practice that's available to students. Here, because a lot of our students go into a more general practice, they're better able to deal with those kinds of changes in the economy. And I think that leads to a more stable environment for the graduates here.
Who are the people in your law school? How many total students do you have in the law school, by the way?
We have an entering class of 150, so about 450 students total.
Give me a picture of how old are they, male, female?
Male-female is very close to even, slightly more men than women. There are sort of a bimodal distribution. You get a lot of people coming straight through college into law school, but you get, especially in economic times like this, a cohort of people who have been out 3, 4, 5 years and then have come back after a first career. And then you get a number of people who are significantly older than that, who have had a full career and have come back to law school.
Mm.
So it really is a quite varied group of people.
Hmm. Yeah.
When they get out, we have about 80% of our graduates stay in the sort of 12 contiguous north central states, but they go all over the place. And so it's a very interesting group of folks coming in and leaving.
I would be interested to hear how you characterize, you had those three groups, the people who come right out of college into law school, those who maybe have worked somewhere else 3 or 4 years, and then the other people who've had a longer career, and this is really a second career, and they're middle-aged or older, returning to law school. How would you characterize the difference in the way that type of student approaches law school and what they value in the education you're giving them?
Ben, you're asking me which of my children I love the most.
maybe so.
No, I think they bring different strengths to it. The people who've been out for a while and are coming back after a career obviously bring the benefits of having had that career, and so they bring that experience. And frequently they have a pretty good idea of what they want to do with the degree, so they're fairly focused in terms of what they want to get out of law school. The students who come straight through college obviously have recently been in school, and so they have that strength. So I think they bring different things, but it's a good mix to have representatives of both of those groups in the school. It really helps.
Do you think this downturn, however moderate in Iowa compared to the national scene in terms of law graduates, is temporary or a longer-term sea change?
Well, I think it's temporary. I mean, the society needs a continuing source of good lawyers, and we supply that. And so I think we are correctly positioned in terms of the size of the school. Being at Drake is wonderful because we're in Des Moines, and that opens up so many experiential opportunities to the students that it really is a very strong program from that standpoint. So, no, I'm not worried about long-term prospects, but it is a challenging environment, and so we're doing everything we can to help the students get through this year because it is going to be a challenge for people.
Mm-hmm. Less than a minute left, Dean Vestal. What bright spots will you be looking for on the horizon to see a turnaround here?
I think we'll look at the small and medium firm hiring starting in this fall. We'll look at government hiring starting in the next cycle. And if those two things regain some strength, I think we'll look at that as a very positive sign.
Dean Alan Vestal of Drake University's Law School, I want to thank you very much for taking the time this afternoon to join us.
Thank you, Ben.
And when we come back here on The Exchange, we'll continue our look at employment prospects for two of the most vaunted professions. We just heard about lawyers, and now we're going to hear about doctors, not only the economic downturn affecting doctors, but also, of course, the new health care reform. We'll find out about the impact of that. Roger Tracy, my guest, when we come back. He is the Assistant Dean of the University of Iowa, Roy J. and Lucille A. Carver College of Medicine, also Director of the college's Office of Statewide Clinical Education Programs. We want to talk to you as well. Are you a doctor in training? What do you see as you look to employment opportunities? Tell us your story in this next half hour. Call now, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, or email us, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. That when we come back, this is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. Great to have you with us this half hour, this hour of The Exchange. I'm Ben Kiefer, and this half hour, the entire hour, we've been focusing on job prospects as our economy struggles to recover from the worst economic downturn since the 1930s. In our first half hour, we looked for the job outlook for lawyers. We'll take another tack this half hour, turning to doctors as those two professions are often taken for as parents as a measure of success, high job security, and now we turn to doctors. Roger Tracy is the Assistant Dean of the University of Iowa College, Carver College of Medicine. He's also Director of the College's Office of Statewide Clinical Education Programs. Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us, Roger Tracy.
I'm pleased to join you. Thank you.
Give us the picture for new doctors or doctors who will be graduating with this backdrop, the economic downturn and the new health care laws.
Well, we're pleased to say that the College of Medicine has a health professions tracking center, and we've continuously tracked the major health professions for the past 35 years. So this enables us to be very precise about both the supply of physicians and the number of job opportunities and exactly where those opportunities are. So in other words, that's a measure of demand. And clearly, Iowa needs more physicians, and the recent passage of the Federal Health Reform Act is simply going to enlarge the demand and the number of opportunities because it promises to extend health coverage to an additional 30-plus million U.S. citizens. So that obviously is going to increase the demand for physicians in Iowa, particularly primary care doctors. These are the frontline generalists, like family physicians, general internal medicine physicians, and pediatricians.
How are we currently meeting the need for primary care doctors?
Well, we can also measure that because we're looking at the number of job opportunities or job vacancies across the state. And we do this on an annual basis at the same point in time, and we use the same method, contacting 100% of the employers of physicians, so medical groups, integrated health systems, every kind of hospitals, and every other kind of organization that employs doctors. So the job outlook in 2009, and we are just underway with our demand study for 2010, we had 119 family physician openings in Iowa in 2009, 92 of those, or 77%. So three out of four were in communities with populations under 15,000. So the demand for family doctors is much more intense in our rural communities than our metropolitan communities, which are doing reasonably well in staying supplied family doctors. Then another primary care specialty is general internal medicine, or internal medicine for adults. We had 42 general internist positions open in 2009, and then we have an additional 36 positions for full-time hospitalists, and the preferred specialty is, again, general internal medicine. And I must mention psychiatry because that is a very high priority across our state. We have 64 openings for community psychiatrists. And one last one to quote, 137 vacancies for physician assistants or advanced practice nurses. They are often used interchangeably. They aren't the same thing, but they are often used by employers interchangeably. And we, as I said, 137 of those openings.
Roger Tracy is the Assistant Dean of the Carver College of Medicine, Director of the College's Office of Statewide Clinical Education Programs, joining us for the rest of this half hour as we look at employment prospects for new doctors. And if you'd like to join our conversation, please do. Are you a doctor in training or a new doctor? What do you see as you look to employment opportunities? Tell us your story. Or perhaps you're on the patient side of things. Do you live in a rural area and struggle to get access to medical care? Do you already have problems with getting an appointment with a primary care doctor? We'd like to hear your stories as well. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100, or email us, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. Roger Tracy, according to a study conducted at Duke University, published in Health Affairs, as we've been talking about, the need for primary care physicians is expected to outpace the number of primary care doctors available. You obviously agree with this assessment, but the Duke University study also finds that a primary care physician might earn $3 million less over a career than, say, a cardiologist. Now, how does the current culture of paying specialty doctors more factor into the willingness of doctors to practice primary care? If we want to get those numbers up, primary care physicians, don't we need to reward them more than we are currently doing?
Yes, that's an absolute given, but it's not the only factor. The current supply, and actually the supply of the past 10 years across the nation, of primary care specialists has been restricted due to the rate at which U.S. medical graduates elect to go into the primary care specialties. In other words, they're opting out on family medicine and general internal medicine and to some degree general pediatrics and showing particular attention for other specialties that would pay them more, as your point states, quoting the Duke study. So they're higher income, and that's important because today the average debt load of a graduating medical student is greater than $150,000, and so that helps them make a decision about which specialty to choose. Also, other factors that I think weigh in here are in the non-primary care specialties, like emergency medicine, let's say, the hours are predictable, and hours for a primary care physician are greater in number and less predictable. So certainly there's a lifestyle factor here. Mm-hmm. And then finally, when you think about our television schedule and what is featured on television, we no longer see Dr. Welby, the generalist. We see emergency medicine physicians and surgeons and others. There's greater prestige, in other words, for the non-primary care specialties. So if we are going to solve this increasing demand issue for primary care physicians, especially given the new federal legislation, we're going to have to do a better job on all three of those fronts in order to get our graduating students to choose careers in primary care.
Or get Hollywood to beef up its script writing for the primary care doctors.
Yes, indeed.
How much of a factor do you think the amount doctors are paid plays into their decision on what they study? You said it was a factor. Do you think it is, in many cases, the determining factor?
Well, if we have any listeners who are truly well acquainted with the literature on this subject, I must say that the literature shows that medical education debt has not substantially influenced the specialty choice of graduating medical seniors. On the other hand, the pattern is pretty clear, though the literature is indefinite as to whether or not there's a direct relationship. We certainly think that it is a factor, but as I said, it's not the only factor. But clearly there is a very substantial difference between the earnings of a primary care physician and the earnings of cardiologists, orthopedic surgeons, radiologists, and other non-primary care doctor.
But we have to say also a specialization like a cardiologist, it took more money to get there, didn't it?
Yes, it did, and you had less earnings during the training period. So it's 4 years of medical school, 3 years of residency, and 2 years of cardiology fellowship. So you're earning less, and you have essentially shortened your career by a couple of additional years by taking further training.
I'd like to have our exchange listeners join our conversation. Are you a doctor in training? Are you a patient in waiting? We'd like to hear your story. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Also, your questions about how the new health care reform might affect the outlook or getting access to physicians. 1-866-780-9100. Let's go to Michelle in Olwine. Hi, Michelle. Welcome to our program.
Hi. I was calling in regards to, like, they had on news yesterday about the veterans getting extra care for mental, you know, being a mental state. And I'm going to school now for counseling, and I was wondering how would that be come into effect.
Okay, so the emphasis on psychiatry, Iowa at the forefront of mental health services for veterans. We've been hearing in the news recently. Roger Tracy.
Yes. I guess my comment would be that veterans have a separate health care system. It's a very well-managed and operated system. Benefits have increased over time, and one of the most important factors is the decentralization of care from major veterans hospitals, like the one here in Iowa City and the one in Des Moines, putting clinics for vets in communities, and closest, I think, to Olwine might be the Waterloo Clinic. And then psychiatry, if you look at the services that are most needed by veterans, there's obviously a full spectrum of service, but counseling and psychiatry are very important services for our veterans. But again, that is run in a separate healthcare system from the rest of the nation.
I'm wondering if when we talk about student debt, doctors graduating, new doctors graduating with debt, has the new healthcare reform changed the way that debt is seen? We had the difference in other types of student debt that if you go into public service, it's treated differently than if you would go into private practice.
Well, we really haven't had enough time, and maybe an additional year isn't going to be enough time to be able to answer questions concerning the impact of the recently passed health reform legislation. It is just going to take some time. So with respect to debt and with respect to earnings, if we are going to truly change the rate at which U.S. medical graduates choose primary care specialties, we are going to have to do that by reducing tuition for those that choose primary care, maybe even eliminating tuition for those who choose primary care and elect to stay in the state. So it's going to take major changes at the front end of the medical education system in order to influence career choice, because that's really what has to happen, is students electing careers have to change the pattern that they've been in, and incentives will be needed to drive that change.
Let's go to Catherine in Des Moines. Welcome to our program, Catherine.
Hi.
Go ahead. You had a question or a comment for
discussion? My boyfriend is currently just about to graduate pharmacy school, and all of his friends and him have kind of been making the decisions of, you know, do they go into a more specialized field and work in a hospital but have to do a residency and continue. They've been doing rotations for a year, so they've actually been paying to work for free. And so they're all splitting off into going into retail and starting to earn money right now, or making the decision to do a few extra years and go into a more specialized field later. And really a lot of it is comes down to what your guest was speaking about earlier with the what you see on TV, and people want the reputation of being a more specialized pharmacist or a doctor, you know, being in the hospital, feeling that recognition.
Hmm. Interesting. Roger Tracy, what is your reaction to those stories?
Well, I think that Kathy is square on the money with her assessment that the pattern clearly shows over the last 10 years an increasing number of pharmacy graduates delay entry into pharmaceutical practice and do 1 year and 2 year graduate training programs to specialize in hospital pharmacy or other family practice pharmacy and other specialties within pharmacy. That is far more common today than 10 years ago.
David is joining us from Des Moines. Good afternoon, David.
Good afternoon.
Yes, go ahead. We have a few minutes left. What's your question or your comment?
I just wanted to share our recent our match results here at Des Moines University. I'm graduating in May, and our Dean Reed sent out our statistics that stated about 45% of our graduating class will be entering primary care with, I believe, 25% going into family medicine, including myself.
And so is that, Roger, Tracy, does that sound good, 45%? Is that...
Oh, that's very good. The rate at the national level for USMD graduates is at about 8%. And our rate here at the university for the group that just went through the matching program to choose their residencies was right at 20%. Mm. And our that's for family medicine, both of those figures, 8% nationally, 20% at the University of Iowa. And then overall primary care, this would be general internal medicine, general pediatrics, and family medicine, was just under 50%. So about the same as Des Moines University.
David, thank you for calling from Des Moines. This email from John in Maquoketa. John writes, I am a doctor of osteopathic medicine, a graduate from the Des Moines University. I would like to point out that a high percentage of those 200 graduates per year go into primary care. Unfortunately, since Iowa is 49th ranked to receive Medicare, Medicaid payments, it is difficult to retain Iowa-trained physicians on a financial incentive. Those that remain, such as myself, do it for non-tangible benefits of living in Iowa. Is that going to change anytime soon? I know you couldn't predict too much about the new health care reform. We've heard for a long time that Iowa is so far down, next to the bottom in these rankings. That a change at some point, Roger Tracy?
Well, that subject certainly, from a lobbying standpoint and a public discussion standpoint, gets attention every year. It's one of the priorities of the Iowa Medical Society, certainly a high priority of the Iowa Academy of Family Physicians, and others' pressure for that change. I don't personally see a change on the horizon, but if we look at the Reform Act, one of the things that is certain is a 10% boost for primary care physicians in their fee schedule. And that will come from moving money from the fees paid to other specialties. So already there is a sign of improvement, but it has to be regarded as a step in the right direction, but more needs to be done in order to increase the reimbursement to primary care physicians and then, again, influence students to choose those specialties, because with changes I'm describing, there would be higher income.
Ray is joining us by phone from Southwest Iowa. Welcome to our discussion, Ray. What's on your mind?
Yes, I'm from Southwest Iowa, and in our area, we have nine counties, and in those nine counties, there are seven hospitals. These hospitals are all expanding their physical plants. They're very competitive one with the other, and but getting doctors into rural Iowa is difficult. The question I have is hospital consolidation something that is being looked at in rural Iowa so that we can better use the physicians and the specialties that rural Iowa needs?
Roger Tracy, I don't know if this is your area of expertise. What can you say here?
Well, we certainly in this office and in the College of Medicine don't hold ourselves out as hospital experts, but we work directly with hospitals. We provide services to rural and urban communities to help them recruit, so we are familiar with the situation. Hospital consolidations or integrations or mergers, as they are often called, have been, for the most part, in urban areas. And so you've seen that in Des Moines and in Davenport and in Mason City and other locations. From the rural perspective, there haven't been consolidations. And I don't sense that there are any discussions underway to integrate hospitals, say, in two different rural communities or three to make them a single regional rural facility. So those discussions I don't think are likely to happen, But it's very important to note that there is a lot of hospital construction, expansion, and replacement, and it's coming because the pay to hospitals using critical access hospital status with the federal government, that has increased the income of rural hospitals and allowed them to replace their facilities over time.
Before we have to go, I wonder if you can give us a specific example of how the University of Iowa Hospitals has reached out into rural rural community with a service or a program.
Well, we have a 30-plus year history of going into rural communities and helping advise the hospital staff, the local physicians, the hospital board on the best methods for attracting physicians into the rural town.
Okay, we'll leave it there. We have to go. Thank you very much for joining us, Roger Tracy, Assistant Dean of the Carver College of Medicine at the University of Iowa and the Director of the College's Office of Statewide Clinical Education Programs. Roger Tracy, thank you so much for making time for us.
Well, thank you for having me.
The Exchange is produced by Jeff Schmidt, Alex Hoyer, and Catherine Perkins. Our producer assistant today, Christoph Mai. Technical support from Dennis Reese. Podcasting and on-demand audio of The Exchange available at iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by Dan Knight. Thanks so much for the calls today, chipping in on our conversation. The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.